Dieter and Hutch back at it during a bye week. We're doing trades and grades. If you missed our episode about trades and grades on offense, you should go back and listen to that. Hopefully all the data and information is still pertinent. The Niners haven't played a new game, so really it's just the trade stuff that would be in question. We're going to do it now for defense. Jake, first and foremost, 4-4 football team and a defensive coordinator in his first year. What kind of grade do you give to Nick Sorensen so far?
It's a good one. I would say a C. I would say a C so far, as in I'm not quite sure. And you've said it before. You're not sure if he's good or bad yet.
Right.
I don't quite know either, which I thought we'd have like a real clear delineation on that one way or the other at this point. I think part of that is the personnel on the defense, where it's like they've got talent, right? They've got Bosa, and Malik Collins has been pretty good. And, you know, Leonard Floyd had a couple decent games to start the year and then sort of faded. And Sam Okwuanu has been pretty good.
He's been good. I mean, do you want to just get into it?
And then there's Fred Warner. I think because of that personnel, because we don't quite know the personnel and what they all are, it's hard to delineate how much of what they're doing is on Sorensen versus not. So yeah, that's the stage for this.
Yeah. He's certainly not at a Spags level or a Brian Flores level. I mean, nothing like that is happening here. No one expected anything like that to happen here. And again, it would be nice to know if he was good or not at this juncture, but I guess you could say that about the entire San Francisco 49ers operation. You could say it about the quarterback. You could say it about everybody. You could say about Kyle this year. Is he doing a good job or not? Hard to say. And maybe that's because we don't know if the front office did a good job or not. So with the offense, we broke it down into five categories: quarterback, running back, wide receivers, tight ends, and offensive line. Sorry to Kyle Juszczyk, you don't get your own group. I'm going to do the same here for the defense. We're talking defensive ends and defensive tackles are two separate things because they have different responsibilities at the forefront of their game. And then linebackers, cornerbacks, and safeties. And let's start it with the defensive ends. You want to talk about studs and duds. Here you go. And frankly, one of these is flipped. So Nick Bosa, I don't think anyone can give him anything less than an A. And Sam Okwuanu, I think, deserves an A as well. I think he's been fantastic. Now, low expectations, to be sure. But he's come in and he's set the edge. He's given the team a burst. You can play him inside. You can play him outside. He's been a winner for this team. Then you get to Robert Beal and Leonard Floyd. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I'm giving them both Ds. I'm giving the overall group a C+. What say you?
I don't really disagree with that. I think Bosa's been so good. And a lot of it, you know, people go to sacks. But the amount of – he's forced, like, two interceptions off of pressures. Like, he consistently changes the game off pressures. And, yeah, he needs to finish better for sure. But he's been so good. It's like you want to give them a better grade, but then you look around and you're like, Leonard Floyd's not doing much. Like, his whole thing is cleaning up after Bosa, and he's not really doing that, and he's not setting the edge in the run game. So
And he's not getting sacks. I mean, he's just been persona non grata. He has 3 sacks on the season. 2 of those feel fraudulent. And
remember, so did Drake Jackson to start the season like 2 years ago.
That's right. And then Robert Beal, I mean, I feel somewhat bad because Yetur Gross-Matos is the guy who's supposed to be in that spot. He came in, actually, I thought he played pretty well, but he was gone before you came back, Jake. I mean, you never got to experience the wondrous Yetur Gross-Matos era because you were out there gallivanting in Japan. Robert Beal, I feel like D is being generous. What does he do?
He made one decent special teams play a week or two ago.
Yeah, that's right. He did against Seattle. He made a decent special teams play. It was so shocking. I had to look him up in my program, if you will, my program. And I'm going C+. Now, let me ask on Bosa. I gave him an A. It sounds like you gave him an A. Do you bring any demerits because he hasn't been finishing, because he has gotten exploited in the run game a little bit?
I think he's been great in the run game, too. I mean, there's plenty of things to criticize on this team. But on the field performance from Nick Bosa is not one of them.
Okay, fair enough. We'll leave it at that. Defensive tackles. This is a team that's 23rd in EPA against the rush this year. Every play when the Niners are in their home red uniforms, a parting of the Red Sea, up the middle. I mean, these guys are just getting washed out again and again and again in the run game. Not terrible in the pass game. Got to give some fairness where it's at. But your defensive tackles primarily, even in this wide nine system, need to be about stopping the run. I'm not going to go player by player here, but I'm giving them a D. And I think that that's probably a bit harsh, but boy, really hard to find things I like about where the defensive tackles are on this team right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if I would, I'm not going to go lower than D. I would, it's tough because when you look at the personnel, like you don't expect it to be good. So do I adjust for that?
You can't grade because on the curve here, Hutch. You can't bring it down because, oh, we didn't expect him to be good.
I'll also give it a D. I was trying to debate whether it was a C-, but we're arguing semantics there.
That's right.
Which,
let's call it a D+. Let's meet in the middle. D+.
D+.
Malik, I think, Collins has been fine, right? Like that
I think he's been pretty good, and a lot is being asked of him in both ways, and there's like a little bit of wear there where he can tail off in the second half, and I think when you ask him to stuff the run, like he can do it, but when you ask him to do both things, it's a tough ask when he's not getting much help. And it's like Jordan Elliott was like graded as like a good run defender, which I think is insane. I've seen him make a couple plays in the run game, but more often than not, I see him. And you think a guy that size, just like Javon Kinlaw, they were like, he's a huge dude. And then you watch him and he's getting double teamed and moved 5 yards away from where the play is happening at the start of the play. And he's not covering gaps. He's not defeating double teams or even holding up. Most of the time he's getting moved out. And then, you know, Kevin Givens is not really a run stuffer.
No.
He has flashes in the pass game. He also, I think, has like 3 sacks.
Yeah,
Just from cleaning stuff up.
He's a decent cleaner. I mean, I think Kevin Givens is a good player. I think that Kalia Davis is a good player. I think that Jordan Elliott has his moments. I think that Evan Anderson probably should be an NFL player, given the limited experience that we've had. I think there's a lot of stuff that's like, this isn't half bad, but it's a low ceiling for this group, and they haven't even come close to achieving it.
Right.
And frankly, Collins's inability to get through a game with juice is very reminiscent of Javon Hargrave last year. And by the way, Javon Hargrave wasn't terribly impressive when he was playing for this team before he tore his tricep?
I think it was
something right off the bone, which sounds terrible. And I like Javon, so, you know.
I think Collins is better all around than Hargrave was last year. I think that's pretty evident. But I do think, you know, we've talked about it. You need somebody who can just be a gap plugger because teams love to double team the 49ers defensive tackles and then the Red Sea's part. And then they hand off that double team and then they send their guards second level. And then all of a sudden you've got like a 15-yard carrier, an 8-yard gain, and then another 7-yard gain, and they get chunk gains and they're really susceptible to that. You know, I know the numbers don't always show that, but when you watch, there's always like a couple drives in games where it's bad. And then, you know, they'll get it back, you know, but you're also, I don't know. I just think they're really susceptible to that and teams are going to keep attacking it. And unless they solve that by bringing someone in, it's not going to get solved.
It really doesn't feel as if they are pressing against other teams' basic run principles, that they're countering it at all. It feels that almost they have to bring somebody else in to stop the run in order to stop the run. They have to have a numbers advantage in order to win.
Yeah.
Because when it's just here's our 5 and here's your 6 or here's your 5, the Niners lose again and again and again. By the way, the flip is true with the 49ers run blocking, with Aaron Banks being incapable of getting to the second level with any consistency, and with Pooney oftentimes getting lost, it's really just Brendel, and you don't want your center to be in that role specifically.
And another thing that happens when your defensive tackles need help is the 49ers stack the box a lot with base, and they try, well, I don't know if they, I don't want to say they stack the box a ton, but they do go base a lot because I think they're compensating for that, knowing that they need an extra linebacker to help with the run. And then that leaves you susceptible to teams go, okay, do that. We're going to run a jet sweep on you and we're going to get 12 or 15 or a touchdown.
Yeah.
So I think functionally, if they can get a guy, I keep saying Jeremiah Ledbetter, and I know that's not a sexy name.
Well, let's get into the trades later, because I think we both agree that defensive tackle's where to go. If you need to look up Jeremiah Ledbetter right now, this is your opportunity so that you won't fail the quiz later on in the show. Anybody out there?
We'll loop back around to trades.
Trust me, we'll talk a lot about Jeremiah Ledbetter. And again, if you don't know who that is,
there on the looping around.
Okay. linebackers. So these are the guys who, when these opposing offensive lines are getting to the other level, they're running into Fred Warner, who that's a universal A plus. There's not a person on the planet who's not given Fred Warner the highest possible grade given his play so far. And then we get to the other linebackers. And Hutch, you need to talk me out of giving everybody else an F. I'm not even trying to be hyperbolic or shifting it. An F for Devondre Campbell, an F for D. Winters, an F for Demetrius Flanagan Fowles. I'm not sure what other grade I can give them. They have failed the class in the same pass fail situation.
A D.
Why? Why does D. Winters deserve a D?
Because he can at least cover space in a way that the other two can't, and triggers to the ball relatively quickly, and I've seen him make some impressive tackles. He's also, you know, exploitable and inexperienced. So I don't think he deserves an F, but Campbell's been bad. Flanagan Fowles was worse.
They couldn't they tried Flanagan Fowles for like two series and they're like, we can't live like this. We'd rather have Devondre Campbell out there.
He's kind of the Ross Dwelly of the defense.
Well, he is okay on special teams, and you just couldn't possibly get rid of an okay special teams player. You know, in fact, in the case of George Odom, you give him $5 million. So, this is bad. It has to be a C, and that is strictly because Fred Warner has pulled the entire group project to the point of passing and you know, not screwing everyone's GPA up. Campbell's best game this season was against the Cowboys, and it wasn't even a good game. It just wasn't horrendous. Every other game has been, where is 59? Go at 59. And as I said in the offensive breakdown, the trades and grades, you don't need us to tell you who the good players are. The opposing coaches will tell you who the good players are. Even your own coaches won't properly insulate. But, you know, in the case like a Colton McKivitz, like, right, you always have George Kittle there. They're telling you something. Tactics have to follow personnel. And even for Kyle Shanahan, a total ideologue, tactics have to follow personnel. And with the 49ers defense right now, they are daring the defensive tackles. Opposing teams are daring the defensive tackles to stand up and fight and win a gap. They are daring Devondre Campbell to do something, anything. And when the defensive tackles are done, guess what? We're going to be in a situation, Niners are probably in base, where Devondre Campbell has to set the edge. How's that gone? We did a 5-minute breakdown of him missing it by six steps. Demetrius Flanagan Fowles is generally unplayable. And D. Winters, as we saw in the Kansas City game, you took out Campbell because he was a complete liability and was going to lose the game for you. We won't change our game plan at all. We're just going to go after 53, just the same as we went after 59.
Yeah.
And that worked wonderfully. So this is a big, big issue for the 49ers. I would argue weak side linebacker would be the spot that they need to go make a trade more than any other, but the return of a Dre Greenlaw sort of mitigates that because he will play. No one's going to hold on to his spot over Dre Greenlaw, but you're probably not getting the same Dre Greenlaw. Linebackers are tough too.
Yeah. Linebackers are so tough. Like, it's hard to, I mean, you saw the Seahawks trade for Ernest Jones and they paid a fourth and they sent Jerome Baker.
Yeah.
And he had a really rough game to start after
Jerome Baker's had nothing but rough games this year, to be fair.
No, I'm talking about Ernest Jones.
Well, Ernest Jones has also had, he got cut by the Rams at the beginning of the season.
He did not get cut by the Rams.
Effectively cut.
No, he did not. He got traded because they did not want to pay him.
Yeah. Well, they had already made it all the way to the end of the regular or all the end of training camp. And then they're like, we don't like this contract. That is a salary dump. You might as well call it cut. It's cheaper to trade him.
They don't pay linebackers.
Well, they did that guy, and he was one time very good. I think it comes along the same lines as wide receiver. Like, you don't want to be trading for a wide receiver because the nuance and difficulty of playing those positions for the 49ers,
right,
with Kyle Shanahan and whomever is the defensive coordinator, because of the response, because of the lack of defensive line play on this team. Like, linebackers are a really tough spot to play on this squad. You're always in the action. You're not cleaning stuff up. The action is coming to you. It's all or nothing. And that's not fair, but it is the circumstance. That's going to be the case for some position somewhere. For this team, it's linebacker. I don't think you want to be throwing somebody into the fray and saying, hey, can you learn all of our stuff and then play as a weak side linebacker next to Fred Warner? Like, that, you'll be fine, right? It'll be good. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. So I think they're going to go with Greenlaw. I'm not optimistic that that's going to look like it used to look, but at this point, I gave everybody else an F, so I'll take anything. And you're going with the D and two Fs. Overall, a C for linebackers this season. Where would they be without Fred Warner? Not 4-4. Let's swing it over to cornerbacks, Jake, because this is a tricky one to grade. Let's preface all of this by saying we understand we can't do anything with Charvarius Ward. Right.
Yeah.
We'll state the facts. He has not been his normal self. Obviously, there's been a groin issue. Obviously, there was just horrendous things that would make sure that I would never get out of bed again that were happening in his personal life that you have to let him retake the final. Right. You have to let him retake test. This is something where you're not going to hold this grade against him. So removing that.
Yeah. And just real quick for anyone who doesn't know, his 1-year-old daughter died. Like, it's rough.
I can't
fathom it.
I can barely function with one who is healthy and happy and living. Like, I can barely function under those circumstances all day, not to get too in the weeds. All day, I think about how to make sure that my wife and my dog and my daughter don't die. I'm riddled with anxiety and you would never hear from me again. You would just never hear from me again. So he gets to retake all the tests. We're removing him from the situation. Yep. We're not being overly deferential here. I understand that he is paid handsomely to be an NFL player. There are some things that just automatically qualify. This is one of them. And I'm very glad that we never went that hard in on him, because it's a reminder that we don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes with these guys, and they're still human beings. B+. I don't know, B+ for cornerbacks. Tough transition. The Amador Lenore gets an A. Renardo Green gets an A. Yeah. Ziggy Adam gets like a C-, maybe a D. He's really good on the outside. This is a good note by you earlier in the season. Like, if you just keep him along the sidelines, there's hardly a better corner. The second you have to move him inside, oh, buddy, it's rough.
Yeah, he struggles on crossers. B+. Again, I agree with you. You know, it's like a... Yeah. I want to have
the worst episode of First Take ever.
I want to have a different, totally different take. But I think, and it's like, this might be a separate episode where we actually rank the most valuable players on the Niners.
Oh well, we got nothing but time, buddy.
I have D'Amador Lenore as like their
third, fourth.
I guess. Well, here's the thing. The problem is I ranked McCaffrey first.
Well, fair enough.
But active players, I had him. Fifth.
Yeah.
Army fourth.
If D'Amador Lenore goes down, I think that is a much, much, much bigger deal than would be naturally led on. I think that he qualifies, not to get too wonky here, as a point per game player for the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, yeah.
Quarterbacks are worth a touchdown almost these days. Depends on the circumstance. I'd say Brock Purdy is probably a 4-point player for the 49ers.
Right.
I think Fred Warner is a 3-point player.
What I was going to say. He's my number two after Purdy, just because you have to rank the quarterback first.
I think Nick Bosa is a 2-point player, and that might be overly deferential to defensive end, but given the alternatives, that's a 2-point player.
Yeah.
And then I think D'Amador Lenore is a 1-point player on this team.
I think they would be able to stomach Bosa not playing a game. I guess it depends on the opponent.
Totally.
You can really make an argument that like they would be able to survive easier with Lenore in and Bosa out than the other way around for a game. It depends on the game.
Depends on the game.
But that's for sure. Just because he has to play in the slot and outside, and I love Renardo Green as an outside corner, but you don't know what he can do in the slot. And maybe Green's fine, and that's totally overstating it. I'm not saying Lenore is a more important player for this team than Bosa, but like he is massively important. And he's played his tail off. and has to know how to play both positions and the nuances of the receivers he's facing in the court. Like, and he's been damn good, and that's incredibly valuable.
Let's also make it clear that because so much is being hit at the linebacker level, he's effectively playing a strong side linebacker for this team, especially when, I mean, particularly when the team plays a too high shell, which they are wont to do. So you have Jair Brown, who we'll get into in a second here, coming down and playing in the box a lot. But D'Amador Lenore is oftentimes the edge setter on the weak side of the defense. And he has done a fantastic job, maybe not so much with the tackles, but just making sure stuff funnels inside. That is not an easy thing to do when you're a smaller player, but he's a feisty little fuck and he's just been marvelous at it. He has made himself so much money this year and he's a joy to watch. I didn't know if you know this, Jake, but he did say he's a big film guy, which I always find hilarious.
When didn't hear him say that, but
he said that after the Cowboys. He goes, I'm a big film guy. And it's like, you're in the National. If you're not a big film guy, that feels
there
like
are
a bit
guys
of a red
that
flag.
Don't. Apparently there are guys out there that don't, which is just wild.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny Manziel.
I guess Kyler Murray had to be guilted into watching film. Remember that?
It's on picture in picture on his monitor. He's got the film in the bottom corner. He's got Call of Duty in the main corner.
I mean, to be fair, you know, Gen Z could probably handle both. That brain's
true.
Able to just...
Yeah, this is why we're going to start to put the video on top of plays and stuff like
we're
that.
We're just in the middle... You know, from now on, we're just going to have like a Temple Run going in the middle of our videos. Just the most Gen Z brain fried shit of all time. That way you don't have to look at us. There's something to occupy you a little.
Yeah. Synapses. Yeah. Y'all might have a dopamine addiction and we're trying to fix that with this content here. Okay. So cornerbacks, I'm going B+. A lot to like. And honestly, not a terrible surprise that this is the highest graded unit on the defense, given that this was the deepest unit coming into the season. And
is this the highest graded unit on the team?
No. I mean, tight ends, running back. Running back is up there. There at B. Tight ends. I mean, tight ends is kind of unfair. It's a guy. Then again, so is linebacker. So,
it's two guys.
It's two guys. Yeah, it's a little tricky. But yeah, cornerbacks have been a plus for this team, a B+, if you will. And I'm even more optimistic about them in the second half of the year because Sammy Womack is actually having a pretty good year for the Indianapolis Colts. He's a good corner. I was expected him to be an NFL starter. Yeah, not going to be a number one or anything like that, but I always thought you could play him as a number two in a base nickel. And the 49ers, I think, agreed with that, but they prefer Darryl Luter. They preferred him thoroughly. I'm going to give the Niners, given their ability to identify this position, and maybe some of that's Steve Wilks. We got to give him some credit here. He was good with the secondary, but their ability to identify this position, they prefer Luter. I'm going to give them benefit of the doubt and say that Luter's a better player than Womack, and Womack's having a hell of a year from what I hear over in Indianapolis. So if they do end up in a situation where, Yadam is out, or, Renardo Green with that ankle injury can't play, like maybe you do get some Luter in your life. And I'm kind of excited to see what that looks like.
They also secretly, and this is not to say he's a good player, but secretly have Ambry Thomas in case of emergency.
Ooh.
Ambry Thomas is still technically on this roster and could return if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I am mistaken, but I do remember. I think that's why we got angry about Jarrett Kingston getting stolen, because I think they stole a roster spot for Ambry Thomas. I should know that for sure, but I think that's the case.
I am seeing Hargrave is on season long. It appears that Hufanga is not eligible to return. That's interesting.
No, Hufanga can return. IR is IR. It depends if you've done it before the season, you're out. If you did it after cuts, you can return. That's how it works.
I'm not even seeing. Oh, there's Ambry Thomas, and he is apparently designated to, he can return. So,
yep.
That we know. That's a thing that's still happening.
Which is, again, not to hype up Ambry Thomas. That's something I would never do unless he had a great play. Also, Rakia Sin is just available.
He is. So. I haven't noticed him lately. They keep him inactive, but, he's still an NFL caliber, perhaps at one time, cornerback. So they're very deep there. And Renardo Green, I think we've gone into him enough, but he's been
He's a stud.
You had two guys in this past draft. I mean, legitimately, anyone who's been with us, your two guys, unquestionably, Malik Mustafa and Renardo Green. You're nailing it, Hutch. You're just absolutely nailing it.
And we sure loved Ricky Pearsall, too.
We sure did love Ricky Pearsall. Niners are nailing it. We're nailing it. Maybe we can get a collab going. Who knows? Let's talk safeties. Let's talk Malik Mustafa. He is now this team's starting free safety, and he's brought some serious juice to the operation. Him and Jair Brown have been really impressive. There's a lot of reasons for optimism with that duo as of late. We also have to grade with everybody else. Talanoa Hufanga was here for a good time, not for a long time, and it really wasn't even that good of a time. And then George Odom got straight up benched. So yep. I'm going to give the safety group a B-, but I feel very optimistic that this can move up or dramatically down. Yeah. But it feels like B- is a fair grade from where they're at. And maybe again, I'm being overly generous, but should I just, for content's sake,
go the complete opposite direction, just do a Skip Bayless impression? Because obviously I agree. I think that's the most reasonable grade. Just give him a D.
Why?
Just claim guys to get off. No, there's no logic. It's a B-. It's Odom wasn't very good, no. But we knew that because they signed guys off the street over him last year.
B-, D+ for Odom. It wasn't horrendous, but he did get benched.
Right. And Jair had some plays he missed early. I think he's been a lot better, a little bit more reliable. Malik Mustafa has been a revelation.
Yep.
And then that's basically it.
Hufanga's...
Tracy Walker played, I think, at one point.
Yeah. So B- for safeties. But if we are in a position, and I don't feel like we're certainly not all the way there yet. But as I was saying in the offensive group, like, you got to keep your toes in the water of the future here. You're a 4-4 team. You're one knee twist away from one of those.
Yeah.
Point per game players I was mentioning from being a team that has like 6 wins at the end of the season or 7. And now you're drafting early and you have to look at, okay, where are we set up as a team to be successful? And I think with a second year safety in Jair Brown, who has improved as the season's progressed, and with a first year safety in Malik Mustafa, who has been, as you said, a revelation, you feel very good about where you stand at safety for the first time in a long time. Really, it's actually an impressive situation. You got a good safety group. You have a good young cornerback group. If you can keep the Amador Lenore around, I'm sure that there's maybe Luter gets his chance next year. And now you can really focus on defensive linemen, defensive ends, defensive tackles, linebackers.
Yeah.
You can focus on those positions where you just don't have that base. So something to think about.
Yeah. I think want to switch over to trades now.
Well, what's the grade for the defense in your mind?
For the defense?
Yeah, if you're viewing it in a holistic sense.
I would say it's been a B-.
No, I have a C+, so we're really...
Wow.
Skip!
Totally different.
Skip! How could you give it a B-? no, it's I have a C+. Yeah. Plus.
I would say
defense is C+.
I would say B-, because there's a lot of inexperience, a lot of unknowns, and they've been pretty good in certain games. They tail off in the second half, and that's pretty concerning. Yeah. But, you know, I feel fairly confident about that. Not fairly confident, but if they hold together and don't have key injuries, it's a group that I think is only going to get better.
Okay. As to this point, we're about in the same range. I mean, that's a difference well within the margin of error on polling. So I have to just take what I've seen already, and this is not a Super Bowl caliber defense. This is an average defense with 2 great players and some nice solid, maybe 3 great players in Lenore, and some solid options beyond. And so, yes, I'm very bullish that they can be better in the second half, but that is to be seen, and we'll judge with some grades then. Let's talk about the trades. I think that we're in agreement. I know a lot of people are interested in defensive ends. I haven't really seen any defensive ends that make sense for this team, but I do see a lot of defensive tackles that make sense.
Yeah.
For this team.
Let me talk about defensive end for a sec, because I just wrote a piece that was, I get it, it was not very sexy. It was basically like, this team is okay, and it was not a bunch of big swing moves. It was like, ship off a 6th or a 7th, you know, swap a couple picks. it's just they haven't shown me enough to say, all right, one player is going to fix this whole thing.
Right.
Like, I don't know any defensive ends that are just going to fundamentally fix this defense. I mean, you look at it, there's like Za'Darius Smith with the Browns. You know, there's Ogbo Okoronkwo also with the Browns. Arden Key with the Titans.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a few guys out there, right, that are like, okay, I guess that would be an upgrade. But, you know, they're also cost a decent amount on the cap. And I don't know what they would. I mean, if it's like a sixth, sure, whatever. But you're also expecting, I think, to get your other edge rusher back, and that'll take some of those
models.
Right. That'll take some of the load off of Floyd, and Sam O has been pretty good. So
yeah,
I'm with you. I look more towards defensive tackle. If they traded for a defensive end, I would get it. You know, but they also spent a lot of money on their defensive ends. And, you know, I think they're going to maintain that confidence rather than doubling down, but we'll see.
Za'Darius Smith is an interesting name. Obviously somebody who the 49ers have seen again and again. He's 32 years old. He does have a non-guaranteed contract for next year. I don't know the iterations of what would be carried over or not. Per OTC, there would still be about $5.5 million that whomever acquires him would have to figure out. But again, trading gets a lot trickier. Right. You're stacking stuff. I don't feel, for all the reasons you just mentioned, that they're in a position to be making a move like that, much for the same reason that they probably wouldn't go get Adam Thielen as a wide receiver. Like, they're not,
especially for older guys, you know, like, which
it hasn't worked out yet. Yeah. Oh, great. We just got the another Leonard Floyd. Maybe two of them will make one. 32-year-old,
you know, it's just,
he is a beast. I mean, and he is big.
Yeah. I mean, Arden Key is interesting because he's obviously worked with Kaserik before.
You know, Nick Bosa wasn't the biggest fan of Arden Key from a conversation I had with Nick. I can leave it at that. Now you add him into the mix, maybe, but now you're taking away snaps from Sam O. I'm not sure that's the best idea.
Yeah. Okoronkwo is a little bit more interesting, but you know, I think the Browns like their defense, and I don't know. They've got nothing really to believe in, but we'll see. Yeah, I think defensive tackle.
What are you talking about?
Defensive tackle.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned Jeremiah Ledbetter earlier. I'm going to offer a Calais Campbell your way. Tell me why Jeremiah Ledbetter is a better option than multiple year Pro Bowler Calais Campbell, Jake.
Well, I'm not going to say Jeremiah Ledbetter is better than Calais Campbell, but Calais Campbell is 38 with more money on his deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably get Ledbetter for a seventh round pick, your latest seventh round pick, or I mean,
six swap or something like that.
Right. I just think Ledbetter is exactly what they need in terms of gap plugging. Like, I just see double teams come his way and he does not move in the slightest.
Yeah.
And I think that's the exact sort of player they need. He's 30. He's on an expiring deal. He's on a bad team. It is quite literally like the perfect scenario you look for. I just think it's like a cheap, clear upgrade to do the one thing that you really need them to do. And it would take the load off of Malik Collins. And they're already running with like Sam O at three technique on pass downs anyway.
Right.
So like, I don't know if you need, you know,
you just need a first and second down guy.
Yeah. That said, Calais Campbell, I don't think anyone would complain about that.
Well, Calais Campbell, first off, has to lose on Sunday to the Buffalo Bills in order for the Dolphins to be in trade mode, because there is sort of a backdoor way for them to make the playoffs. Seven teams make the playoffs. Like, you can be around 500 almost all the way to the end, maybe even until week 16 when the Dolphins host the 49ers. And now that Tua is back, they can buy into some possibility that they can pull it together. I think that's foolish, but ultimately Mike McDaniel's coaching for his job. He's probably not keen to give up one of the few players on his defense, which has actually been good this year, in Calais Campbell. But you know, the beauty of Ledbetter, from the videos that you cut up and have shown me, and from what I've been able to see,
like a sick man.
Yeah, he's just the stumpiest boy. And I mean that as the most positive possibilities, in that he gets double teamed and he just doesn't move. He holds his ground better than most players I've seen in the NFL. I mean,
yeah,
without having the sort of stature that makes you think like, oh, this dude's a monster. He's not an Al Woods type. He's kind of a stumpy dude. And yet when he anchors, I don't know what other word to use here, he does not move. He is the opposite of the 49ers offensive line. This dude anchors like nobody's business. And that's huge, because that creates clear lanes for the linebackers to attack as opposed to react, which is what they're having to do now based on everyone just getting washed out up the middle.
The amount of times you just see the Red Sea's part and linebackers are taken out of the play just because, even for 1 second, their defensive tackles can't just maintain it, or one of them just gets totally cleared out. It's not tenable, and they didn't prioritize it in the offseason, and we said it would be an issue, and it still looks like an issue. I want to mention a couple other names. Shelby Harris of the Browns, I think, would make sense. People have thrown out Maurice Hurst, who's with this team and basically never played because he was injured for his 2 years and had a resurgence. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's the type of player they need to solve the problem that they have.
Yeah, he's a gap splitter, not a gap
builder. Yeah, and why would he want to? I mean, it's not up to him, but does he really want to come back after he's played well with the, you know? And then Devon
Godshaw. Such great memories from sitting on the bench.
Right. Devon Godshaw of the Patriots is a name that's been thrown out there. He's not played well this season. Like, no, he doesn't look,
he was fine against the Niners. That was his best game of the year, from what I can tell.
He's not a guy, he's a nose tackle who's like not really holding gap. Like, sometimes he does, but he's not really. He doesn't look that impressive to me as a gap plugger, which is what they need. And if you're not going to do that, okay, show me you're going to like rip off and you've got a swim move, or you're getting creating pressure with power, something that you're condensing the pocket. And he's not really doing that. He's just looked really underwhelming to me. And I see no reason to make a move for that guy. DJ Jones, the Broncos probably aren't going to trade him. One guy I think would probably be the best case scenario. B.J. Hill of the Bengals, I think, would be perfect. And that's a guy I'm like, if that's a fourth rounder, spend that Chase Young fourth rounder right on him, because then you've got something. Like, he is a really well-rounded player who's just, he's going to hold his own. He's going to take a lot off of Collins. And I think that's a really good player. It depends, though, if the Bengals, I don't know, you know, they're kind of pot committed with this roster, no matter how bad they are, but they say, all right, it's not our year, and shed some pieces. I don't know. Would a fourth be enough to get him? Maybe fourth, seven. I don't know, because it's tough to figure out what the market value is, but I think he would be an awesome get.
B.J. Hill does have another. Oh, no, this is the final year of his contract, so that would be huge. He's 29 years old, and he is exactly what you're looking for in a even front defensive tackle. 6 foot four, 315 pounds. Good against the pass, good against the run.
Yeah.
You nailed it. He'd be a perfect player for this team. You can take on the cash because, it's seven or something. You got the cap space to make a move like that.
Yeah.
You have the draft picks to make a move like that. That's the best case scenario. I think Ledbetter is the steal. I think Campbell is the one that would get the fan base amped up. I think that any of those three guys, and a Shelby Harris, if we might, would all be great. The prior three, better options. Than there. If you had to rank, I think Hill 1, Ledbetter 2, Campbell 3, or maybe it's a tie for 2 with Campbell and Ledbetter.
I'm with you. I would take either of those guys. I just do think they need something on the interior, unless they just really believe Evan Anderson is going to grow into a much more prominent player for them. But he doesn't have, I mean, defensive tackle is different, but he doesn't have any of the athletic traits to indicate that. So.
No,
and they do ask their defensive tackles to run and cover ground, especially when teams screen at them. So,
yeah, he's not holding gaps either. I mean, he's able to kind of wiggle under arms at times. But I do think that I don't think that tape is going to be his friend. That's my guess, because it wasn't his friend when we were evaluating him last spring, where you go, oh, there's something here. And then the more you watch, you go, oh, that was it. That was all that was there. And I've now gone a quarter without seeing anything worthwhile. So listen, we're rooting for Evan Anderson. We certainly have seen enough to say that, hey, give him some reps, give him some run. Let's make something happen here. Not exactly high level competition, but for defensive tackle, I think we're in agreement. That's the place to prioritize. From all everything I hear, that is the place the Niners are prioritizing. And I'm just curious to see where they end up, because they might also end up in a situation where they have to have a tough conversation with Chris Kocerek saying, hey, you need to change your thing up here a little bit. We're not going to just go get you another gap splitter
right
up the middle. You're going to need to, you know, adapt so that you have someone who can hold the fort a little bit. I know he can do it.
Is wide nine really a sound scheme to be running when teams, you know, I mean, it's a philosophy and it's worked well for the Niners in the past, but I feel like the last few years it's allowed teams to chip Bosa really easily, and it's a long run up I think that he likes, and you can really see what a tackle's doing and evaluate. But when you're getting chipped and you've got one threat, it takes a while to get involved. You can scheme away from that a little bit. I think the last position that's really worth considering the trade market is linebacker that we mentioned.
But any names?
I think, you know, Akeem Davis Gaither, does that do anything for you?
He's also
on the Bengals. He's the Bengals, I think, third linebacker, went to App State. Really, the guy I'm most interested in, and this is kind of a sicko one, is Jamien Sherwood of the Jets, who is their, they've got CJ Mosley and they've got Quincy Williams, who are both pretty good linebackers. Their third is Jamien Sherwood. Okay. Folks, let me say it in case you weren't aware. I can say, I feel like I have to say it as a Jets fan. I don't really have any feelings towards them.
How could you at this point?
They added Rodgers and how long I've been doing this.
Yeah.
The Jets are cooked. They're a joke. They're a disaster. Woody Johnson is an absolute mess and a joke of an owner. And they let Aaron Rodgers in and said, do whatever you want to do. And it turns out Aaron Rodgers is also cooked and no longer has any desire to cook. Sorry for how corny that came out, but they're a mess. And if they don't trade some pieces at the trade deadline, that is malfeasance. Also, what has Douglas done to show that he's like deserving of keeping that job? They have like not had a winning
Joe Douglas.
Right. In like 6 years, I don't think they've had a winning record.
No. So, but they fired their coach and things have been going great for them since then.
So they got to move some pieces. So I'm looking at Jamien Sherwood, who's been pretty interesting. He plays like a decent amount for them as their third linebacker in a scheme with a similar defensive coordinator. And granted, he's playing more of the third linebacker role than the Will. But I think this is like a guy that you could get for a seventh or a sixth or like a late swap. And if it's not there for that, then you don't do it. But to me, that would be my approach. I think you would go get a defensive tackle. If BJ Hill's not there, you throw a seventh and see which one of the guys we names comes up, or maybe a sixth. Sherwood, I think you do basically the same thing. And then on offense, we talked about it in the last one, but like if Kendrick Bourne is not available for the right price, then you don't go get a wide receiver. Right. You just sort of stand pat. And that's how I would handle it, because I know this team is pot committed, and I've said that seven times about other teams. And there's plenty of reason to believe, like, sure, you could make a big pickup, but, and they do have some draft capital to spend. You know, they've got a couple extra thirds, a couple extra fourths. They've got 3/7. So yeah, I think you should spend a little bit of that and see what you can do with it. But I'm not sold on a lot of the defensive end names out there. I'm not sold that there's like a wide receiver for the right price that would immediately fit into the scheme. And linebacker's a tough one where I don't know how many teams are willing to give up their second linebacker who's solid, and how many would fit right into the 49ers scheme. So that's what I would do. I'd throw some late round stuff out there, sprinkle a little bit, kind of go Farhan, which I know is going to trigger some people. But I do think this team's problem is largely with depth. And if players go down, and I think building that up with some guys who are pretty decent, can be like day one fits for this team. And then maybe you get some comp picks for him. Like if BJ Hill goes into free agency, maybe that's why the Bengals don't trade him.
Right.
But you got some options there.
My concern with Sherwood, I should get this out of the way, is that he's 24 years old and he is playing well. He's out of Auburn. He's a fifth round pick.
Right.
They got some old ass linebackers.
This is true.
And Quincy Williams is somebody that they can absolutely cut at the end of the year with relative impunity and just give Sherwood that job, and they would have to give him a new contract because his contract is up at the end of the year. So it's just a question on if they want to bet on him long-term. Linebacker's typically a position that, outside of the very top players, like a CJ Mosley when he signed, has a pretty limited salary, all things considered. So I'm not sure if he's on the market, and it might take a little bit more than just a seven to grab him. But I do like where your head's at this point. Go and get some guys who can bring you some depth now and later. And if you have to use up a draft pick that's late round, so be it. You'd be thrilled if you were able to find a player who can give you depth, in this case now being 2025 and later next year. So a little bit of one in the hand versus two in the bush to be played there. And we all know the right answer to that question. And the 49ers should sure as hell know the right answer to that question, because they played the two in the bush game again and again and again and lost. They had none in the hand. So that's the defensive grades. Do we want to even bother with special teams grades? No.
Even a special team sickos, I'm going to say no.
D plus, something like that. Hasn't been as bad as everyone makes it out to be. Hasn't been good either. So we'll leave it at that. Overall, it's a 4-4 team. Bill Parcells was right. You are what your record says you are. And this team has eight games remaining, starting in Tampa Bay on November 10th. And they are going to be excruciating all the way down the stretch. That's what I can guarantee about this team. This will be anything but easy to just make the playoffs, much less get to where they want to go at the end of the campaign.
Yeah, I still maintain they're going to end up being like 6-7, and their season will end with that road game against the Bills. But happy to be proven wrong. Have been wrong plenty before. Will be wrong going forward. But
I don't know. Also, I don't know if you've been that wrong. I'm just saying.
So
the thing to keep out, keep an eye on out, and then we'll let you out of here. This team can't lose back-to-back games again. It can't. So you have a stretch where you can win two, three in a row. That doesn't change anything. Can't lose back-to-back games again. Can't go into a hole of 0-2. And there are a couple of stretches here where you can see it possible. Green Bay and Buffalo, bookending Thanksgiving. Oh, buddy, those are going to be tough. To come out 1-1 on that, you're going to be feeling pretty good about this team. I don't know where it comes and where it goes, but you feel pretty good if they get a win in one of those two games, because they will be the underdogs in both on the road. Chicago and the Rams, short week for the Rams, Thursday Night Football. That's a tough one. And, of course, add that to the Buffalo.
The Rams are that team that just never dies.
Never die. Because guess what? They have a really good quarterback. I don't know what Miami's going to be, but a long week of travel, even off a mini bye, and then Detroit and Arizona, week 17, week 18, back-to-back. Short week for the Niners going to Arizona in week 18. Detroit Monday Night Football, that's going to be a tough-as-hell game. We'll see if Jameson Williams drives or flies. The second half of this schedule, we talked about it ad nauseum when it came out before the season started. It's probably not as dangerous as it once looked, but it's still dangerous as hell. And this is a team that has no room for error when we talk about not being able to lose back-to-back games. So time to make some trades, if nothing else, for the content.
I'm with you. Do you expect that they'll... I would be surprised, by the way. 2018 was the last time they did not make a move at the deadline. I would be surprised if they didn't do something. But I don't really expect them to take like even a third and go get somebody. And probably by the time we post this, they will have done exactly that. It's like when I was asked, do you think McCaffrey's going to play? And I said definitively, yes. He's going to play week one. I said 100%. I said 100%, which is not something I believed.
No.
I was just like, let's say something. 100%.
I'm glad you don't bring that kind of hyperbole here to this show, Jake.
No. It's stupid. And it was a reality check for me. So
let me ask you this before we go. Do they need 5 wins or 6 wins down the stretch to make the playoffs? 5 gets them 9, 6 gets them 10.
If they lose to, it depends what they do in the division, because if they beat the Seahawks, if they sweep the Seahawks, Rams, and Cardinals, you only need 9.
Okay.
But if you, the Cardinals aren't going to be a factor, but the Rams could be, Seahawks could be. If you lose to Seattle,
we're then
you need to finish with 10.
All right. Well, something to keep an eye on. We'll be with you all the way to the end, whether that be in a couple of weeks or all the way in February. We'll be with you all the way to the end. And we'll get into some more stuff here as the bye week continues. Next week, we'll know if Christian McCaffrey is going to play or not. That's kind of important and interesting information. But yeah, we'll get right back into the swing of things and enjoy the weekend, everybody.
Enjoy your weekend, folks. Enjoy it.